Alexander Rose's new book is Men of War, The American Soldier in Combat at Bunker Hill, Gettysburg, and Iwo Jima. It is a chronicle that investigates the experience of battle as seen through the eyes of the American soldiers at Bunker Hill in 1775, Gettysburg in 1863, and Iwo Jima in 1945. He says it is not a book about how great generals won their victories, nor is it a study in grand strategy. Instead, it is an original look at ordinary soldiers under fire. It seeks to answer one question, what it's really like to fight in a battle. Again, the title of the book is Men of War, The American Soldier in Combat at Bunker Hill, Gettysburg, and Iwo Jima. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Alexander Rose to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
You're certainly known for your book, Washington's Spies, and I'm interested of what brought you down this line of thinking of looking at not only what it is like to fight in a battle, but what it is like to fight in these three battles.
The reason is that I when I was an undergraduate many years ago, I picked up a copy of a book I'd never heard of before. And it was John Keegan's The Face of Battle. And I was about 18 years old, and I thought this was the most sort of fascinating book I'd ever read. And you know, I'd always had an interest in military history and toy soldiers and all that kind of thing anyway. So, you know, that book was an eye-opener. And I've always had it in mind. I've still got my original copy. And then, many years ago, after Washington Spies, I was casting around for a new idea, and you always come up with when you're an author, you come up with a bunch of really terrible ideas, and finally, hopefully you come across one that's really good. And it occurred to me one night, why not just do an American version of The Face of Battle with American soldiers in American battles? It had never been done before, and it seemed to be a book that I could really get my teeth into and just spend many years investigating. I'd always been interested in what it would be like being in a battle, and that's what this book is about. It's a book about battles that's not really about battles. It's about being in a battle and what it's like in various eras. As for the battles themselves, Bunker Hill, Gettysburg, and Iwo Jima, that was a tricky one about how to choose three of them, and I think I just sort of settled on them being iconic. I wanted to get battles that pretty much every American had heard of. If you went up to an American, just a regular person in the street, and you asked them, hey, name me a famous battle of the Revolution, chances are, rather than something like Germantown or Monmouth or something like that, most people would say sort of Lexington or Bunker Hill or Yorktown. And there's several others, of course. But Lexington and Concord, I think, had just been done by David Hackett Fisher in that great book, Washington's Crossing.
Right.
I didn't want to just – there was nothing more I could add to his his tome anyway. And I didn't really want to do Yorktown because the French were involved, and I wanted to keep this a book about American soldiers. So Bunker Hill seemed to fit the bill. It was, iconic. Pretty much everyone had heard of it. It was it involved American militia and British redcoats, so it was kind of simple. There was very little – naval involvement. And then, Gettysburg, well, Gettysburg is Gettysburg. Everyone has heard of it. It's the sort of the central battle,
right,
cemented in history of the Civil War, even if it wasn't as important as many think. Vicksburg was much more important at the time. And Iwo Jima, well, that's just kind of a subjective interest of mine. I didn't really want to do an Atlantic theater. I think Stephen Ambrose had done Band of Brothers, and so I didn't want to do a D-Day. I thought about Battle of the Bulge, but then I just settled on the Pacific. It just hadn't been covered quite as much, and it took place on an island, Iwo Jima. So again, you have that isolation of U.S. Marines versus Japanese infantry. So it's quite sort of clear cut that way. You can focus really in on what it was like being a soldier at that time. So it's really quite a subjective a bunch of yardsticks that I used.
I want to get to Iwo Jima specifically in a moment and get to that topic. But if there's a commonality here, it is the human one, right? It is the human commonality, the fact that the most important factor in any of these battles is the human factor.
Well, yes, absolutely. And I think that's in the case of any battle. I find with a lot of books, military history books, they either sentimentalize warfare or they glamorize it or euphemize it. What I wanted to do was just get to the, you know, what it's really, really like being in a battle. And I didn't want to pull any punches, and I just wanted to find out only what the soldiers at the time thought. I was only interested in privates, corporals, sergeants, maybe a lieutenant, but no one really higher than that. And I just wanted to sort of show it from the human angle, you know, sort of fear, apprehension, the physiological factors that go into it, the physical factors, the psychological factors. There's a huge amount there, and I think I cover a lot of ground that hasn't really been covered before.
One of the things that shocked me, and I did not know this. There are many things in the book that I didn't know. But when you talk about Iwo Jima, a third of all the Marines that were killed in World War II died at Iwo Jima. That's a staggering figure.
It's an incredible statistic.
Yeah.
Well, another one is that at Bunker Hill, just for instance, it's a kind of a small skirmish of a couple of thousand guys. It was actually the bloodiest battle of the American Revolution. And it's almost a precursor to Iwo Jima in that sense. Gettysburg, we all know about that too.
Sure. You seem to wrestle with this idea that those of us who have not been in battle wonder how we would perform in battle.
Yeah, that's a question that I've been asking myself for a long time. As I say in the introduction, I think, I've never been in a battle. I've never been a soldier. I've never heard a shot fired in anger. And, you know, neither are John Keegan, by the way. I think there's actually something to be said for not having been in an army, because it gives you, you can be almost impartial. You're an observer, almost a scientist of human behavior and what actually happens during battles. You don't come with any preconceived notions of what it's like. You don't try and apply your own insights or your own experiences to people who lived 250 years ago. I tried to be detached the whole way through. I wasn't what I call a flesh witness to war. I'm more of an analyst.
You make the point that when we talk about military history, we so often talk about the armament, we so often talk about the guns and the generals and the plans, and we don't talk about the men and women who are actually doing the fighting as much, if at all.
There's military history is a strange beast. I like to call myself a military historian or an intelligence historian, I guess, with Washington Spies. I know a lot about weaponry, but you know, weaponry is not the be all and end all of military history. It's a sort of a subfield. There are many, many subfields. One subfield happened to be that hadn't really been covered much since Keegan is, again, you know, the human, just what it, you know, the men and women nowadays who are at the sharp end of the fighting. As I say quite bluntly in the book, and this probably hurt my sales, I say, look, if you want a book about to know the history of Gettysburg, the Battle of Gettysburg, this is not that book. There's 5,000 other books about Gettysburg. This is a book specifically about tactics and what it was like being a northern or a southern soldier at that particular battle, which in itself is quite a typical late 19th century battle, almost Napoleonic rather than modern.
You've referenced it a few times here, you do in the book as well, John Keegan's The Face of Battle, which came out some four decades ago. Is there a commonality there? A universal trait that the men of war have?
I think that's a very complex question. It's one I wrestle with in the book. you know, Keegan came from a different time. I think he applies, and he talked to a lot of World War II veterans for his book. I mean, I think he taught at RMA at Sandhurst, and so most of his fellow dons there were teachers there were sort of World War II veterans or and so on. And I think he applied the lessons of World War II to say the Battle of Agincourt, which was the first battle he did, which in 1415.
Right.
I think we've moved on since then. I'm interested in not only the commonality of experiences over time and space, but also what's changed in the experience of battle. For instance, to make that a bit clearer, there are certain things like physiological reactions, just human reactions to combat are universal and go back to the Neanderthals, I guess, or at least to Homer's Iliad. You get a widening eyes, you get increasing heartbeat, you get a fight or flight instinct, you get an adrenaline pumping and then dumping, and hence a lot of exhaustion after a battle. That kind of thing is, everyone suffers from that. Again, that's a similarity. A difference, though, is in how a person actually conceives or experiences combat. For instance, at Bunker Hill, Bunker Hill was an Enlightenment battle. It took place in the late 18th century. It was, the militia there didn't really conceive of battle or war as we do now. It was just part and parcel of their everyday lives, and they lived quite harsh lives out on the New England frontier. Most of them had, or a great many of them had experience during the French and Indian War, so they knew their business and what it entailed. And they were short-term militia guys, so they would, the fighting lasted for 3 hours maybe, and that was it. It was over, and then if you wanted to, you could probably pretty much go home. So there's not really much distinction between being a civilian and a militiaman. You're in this sort of ambiguous position. By the time of Gettysburg, there is you've had the influence of the Romantic movement from the early 19th century, with its emphasis on feelings and emotions and sensations, which is completely alien to people of the mid 18th century. They don't write about it in those terms. So you have an influence, and in the 19th century you have this the rise of sort of this interest in morale, a man's internal power to overcome physical obstacles. So what you have by the time of the Civil War is combined with a sort of a Christian or muscularly Christian ethos is this idea that one must endure high casualties in order to prevail over physical obstacles. And so what you get is this tolerance, which is mad to us, this tolerance of extremely high casualties, combined with semi-incompetence by various officers in the early Civil War, where they just didn't know how to command long lines and columns of men properly. And so there's this obsession with Napoleon and all that kind of thing that influences them. By the time of Iwo Jima, which is at the end of a very, very nasty war in the Pacific, you get the Marines there regarded the task of conquering the island as a job, almost like a factory job. I mean, this was the high point of Taylorism and mass production and industrialization, and they regarded the process of liquidating the Japanese defenders as something just sort of this unpleasant job you have to do, and then you get to go home. And nowadays in Iraq, I have a sort of an epilogue in Iraq and Afghanistan.
You do.
Because of this sort of postmodern, it's high tech and so forth, there's much more of an emphasis on running wars efficiently. And obviously with a minimum of bloodshed on our side, of course. Which is, again, it's just so, the rule here is that the principle here is that as society changes, so does our experience of combat and how we interpret them. And that's something I wanted to bring across in the book. I mean, you can't just put a Marine at Iwo Jima and slot him into a militiaman's role at Bunker Hill, for instance, and it's not the same person. He's not going to see battles in the same way. So it's a kind of a complex question I issue I raise in the book.
It is complex. I'm wondering if there is something, if you found there to be something fundamentally American in looking at these as compared to, say, Keegan's look at a British soldier.
Yes, there is. I mean, the soldiers or Marines at Iwo Jima are, you know, there is a sort of almost a genetic or there's a shared cultural link with their forebears at Bunker Hill. You see certain types of behaviors repeat themselves. You see a certain type of willingness to adapt in the field very quickly to changing circumstances and realities. There is an emphasis on flexibility, on mobility, on small unit cohesion, and you know, being able to change your line of command very quickly. And it's the key to victory. There is, in a sense, an American way of war, I guess you could call it. It's not strictly defined, but there is a loose definition of it. So there is a sort of a golden thread running through the warps and wefts of American history that I point out in the book as they come up.
The book is fascinating. It is Men of War, The American Soldier in Combat at Bunker Hill, Gettysburg, and Iwo Jima. Historian Alexander Rose is the author. The book is published by Random House. Alexander, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for sharing. I appreciate it. Again, the title of the book, Men of War, published by Random House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.